Anniversaries are special times in the music world, occasions when others who've been touched, taught, taken to heights, and moved to tears by the honoree can relive those moments, express their immense gratitude, and celebrate the remarkable gifts given to the composer or performer who's gone on to share those gifts with the rest of us. January 2nd, 2026 is just such an occasion. The date marks the 40th anniversary of Mark Laubach's tenure as organist and choir master at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Wilkes-Barre. And he will be honored this Sunday, January 4th, with a service there to celebrate the remarkable occasion. We learn from St. Stephen's that Mark administers an active liturgical and choral music program, a continuing concert series, and music from St. Stephen's, a broadcast heard weekly here on WVIA Radio. In 2008, Bishop Paul Marshall made Mark honorary canon presenter in recognition of his accomplishments and contributions to the musical and liturgical life of the Diocese of Bethlehem. Mark served for 1 year as fellow in church music at Washington National Cathedral. His organ teachers have included Clinton Miller, George Markey, Donald MacDonald, and David Craighead. Since winning first prize in the 1984 American Guild of Organists National Competition, Mark has performed in many of the most prominent churches and concert halls in the U.S., Great Britain, and Germany, with appearances at Westminster Abbey and St. Paul's Cathedral in London, King's College Chapel in Cambridge, and cathedrals in Bristol, Chichester, Gloucester, Lincoln, Norwich, and Wells. He is a frequent recitalist, clinician, and competition adjudicator for national and regional conventions of the American Guild of Organists and the Association of Anglican Musicians. Mark received a bachelor's degree in church music from Westminster Choir College and a master's degree in organ performance and literature from the Eastman School of Music. He's recorded 3 critically acclaimed compact discs on the Pro Organo label, Teutonic Titanics, French Fest, and Mosaics in Sound. There was another notable anniversary in 2022, marking the 200th birthday of composer and organist César Franck. We're told César Franck's influence as a composer and teacher profoundly altered the lives and careers of many organists, often turning technical training into a lifelong pursuit of musical nobility and spirituality. Charles Tournemire, for one, originally seeking a conventional path, Tournemire credited Franck with saving his artistic soul by discouraging him from pursuing the rigid Prix de Rome, Rome Prize. He later remarked that if he'd not followed Franck's advice, he would have made false theater and been lost irremediably. A student and later the titular organist of Notre Dame, Louis Vierne, described Franck as a man of utmost humility, whose music was a sermon in sound. This deep sense of the dignity of art and nobility of mission became the foundation for Vierne's own career as a composer of monumental organ symphonies. Mark Laubach is one of those organists who's been deeply affected by the music of César Franck, so much so that in 2022, to mark the bicentennial, he planned a series of 3 concerts featuring the most important works for organ by César Franck. We invited Mark to sit down at the Art Scene table to talk about his passion for Franck and why he selected the pieces he did to share with all of us.
I've loved Franck ever since I first piece I learned of his was the Cantabile when I was 13 or 14. And that was when I was with my first organ teacher, Clint Miller. And for my 14th birthday, my father bought me 3 LP recordings of the complete organ works of Franck recorded by Jeanne de Messieu, she was brilliant. And I listened to those recordings. I'm sure it wasn't Dad's idea. I think Clint put him up to it. But I listened to those recordings nonstop, and so I really got to know the Franck pieces in my head, if not in my fingers and feet. And I've always loved her interpretation of the pieces. I've listened to all sorts of other interpretations too, of course. But I thought, well, you know, someday it would be really neat to do all of the pieces. And before the pandemic hit, I had played 9 of the 12. There are many smaller works, primarily little pieces he wrote for a harmonium that could be played without pedals. But his major organ works, there are 12 of them. The 6 pieces from 1858 to 1862, I think he wrote them. The 3 pieces written in 1878, and then the 3 chorales written in 1890, which were literally his swan song. He wrote them, and then he died, very tragically, from complications from an omnibus accident where the pole of the bus struck him as he was walking to an appointment. And he recovered from that, but pleurisy developed, and of course back then there were no antibiotics, so he died. But like a month or two before he died, he dragged himself to the Saint Clotilde organ in Paris, where he played, to verify the registrations that he wanted to have for those 3 pieces. And then he went back home and never got out of his bed after that. So those 3 chorales are really his swan song. I'd only played 9 of the 12, and then along came the pandemic. And one of the few good things to come out of the pandemic was that I could practice nonstop. And I learned the other 3, one of which was the longest of them, which is about 26 minutes long, the Grande Pièce Symphonique.
What is it that personally grabs you, speaks to you about César Franck?
So many things. He had such a gift for melody and harmony. He was in many ways a Wagnerian. He certainly was influenced by Wagner and Liszt with the chromaticism. All you have to do is look at his organ scores and you see all these double sharps and double flats. And it can be kind of hairy, but it works so beautifully. Elegant construction of his pieces and just very spiritual. I really do react to music, which may not be overtly or expressly spiritual, but nevertheless has that element to it. And Franck's music is very, very much a mirror of what his personality must have been like. His students devised a nickname for him. They called him Pater Seraphicus, Angelic Father, because he was such a nice guy. And even when there were other composers who were being nasty to him, I have to say, as much as I love Saint-Saëns, Saint-Saëns was brutal and criticized his music up and down. And yet, Franck still dedicated one of his pieces to Mon cher ami Camille Saint-Saëns. So he was that kind of a nice, forgiving, loving, genuinely good person. And I think that sometimes that sort of thing comes through in a person's works. And also the simple fact that Franck was such a revolutionary figure in organ music. After Bach, most organists consider him to be among the most important contributors to organ literature. And he started a whole school of French symphonic organ composition and performing, which spawned the likes of Charles-Marie Vidor, Louis Vierne, Maurice Durufle, Olivier Messiaen. All of them follow in the train that was started by César Franck.
What about improvising? Was he an improviser?
He was an improviser, and obviously that became very much of an important aspect of French organ performance as well. That was already the case, but Franck took it to new heights. The organ music that preceded Franck in the early 1800s, late 1700s, had become somewhat trivialized, and that may be partly because of the French Revolution and the reactions against the church and more of the age of reason. And so churches often became temples of reason, and there was getting a lot of getting away from the traditions of the church, like chant. And organists would play recitals that would be more programmatic, like someone would improvise a piece, which would be a programmatic depiction of a storm or a battle. And it was usually very empty and kind of amateurish music, not very well crafted. And along comes Franck, who totally turns the tide and goes back to well-crafted, well-thought-out, well-structured music for the organ. And that was revolutionary, really.
You mentioned St. Clotilde. Did the organ there have an impact on what he wrote?
Very definitely. The primary organ builder of that time in France was a man by the name of Aristide Cavaille-Coll, whose instruments still exist. Many of them have been revised or rebuilt, but the organ at Saint-Sulpice is very much identical to what it was in Vidor's time and Dupré's time. The organ at Saint-Clotilde has been changed, but the stops that were there in Franck's time are still there. And a friend of mine just told me that he actually played a Franck piece on a visit there, and Jean Langlais' widow had settings where you could just play on the stops that Franck had, and he played, I think it was one of the chorales that he was able to play on the stops that Franck had. Actually, the organ he played at the church before he went to Saint-Clotilde was called Notre-Dame de Lorette, and that was a Cavaille-Coll instrument. He called it his own little private orchestra, which is kind of how I feel about the organ at St. Stephen's, too. But when Franck went to Saint-Clotilde, the organ there was new. So the organ and he were both new in 1857 when he went there. And it was magnificent. It was definitely a step up for him from Notre-Dame de Lorette. And I think that's what really fueled his inspiration to begin composing the six pieces in 1858 to 1863, I think. And there's a story that Franz Liszt came to visit him there at Saint-Clotilde, and Franck played the six pieces for Liszt in a private performance. And Liszt said something like, "These great masterpieces have every reason to stand alongside the works of Sebastian Bach," which was high praise coming from Liszt. And all throughout the rest of his life, that organ influenced his works. Definitely the last three, the three chorales.
Tell us about the recital that you gave at St. John the Divine.
Oh, I was very fortunate to play a recital there some years ago, and it included a number of things, but I ended it with the Franck Finale, which is the last of the six pieces. And the thing that is so wonderfully thrilling about playing at St. John the Divine, apart from the instrument, which is one of G. Donald Harrison's most brilliant instruments, that acoustical space is just really phenomenal. About 9 or 10 seconds of reverberation. And one of the things that's essential to interpreting Franck's music is a reverberant acoustic. It's much harder to play Franck's music in a dry acoustic. For one thing, he had huge hands, so you have to play legato, and at least in a reverberant space, you can get away with a few little breaks here and there. But in a dry room, you really have to work hard at keeping everything connected. But also just for the ambiance and the sense of the music, that space at St. John the Divine was really, really thrilling to play with. And Franck also, in many of his, most of his organ works, has these grand pauses where he'll play a big chord or section and let go. And that's when the room takes over. And you have to have a room that can do that. Fortunately, we have a lovely reverberant space at St. Stephen's, which makes that possible.
You've recorded Franck.
That's right, yes.
And why did you choose that particular? Why did you choose the Fantasy?
The Fantasy in C. I'm not quite sure why, but I just, you know, I go through periods where I love a certain piece. You know, people say, what's your favorite Franck piece? And it's, I can never decide because I love them all, although I must say I have a very special love for the Prière. More about that later, but to get to the fantasy really was Franck's first piece of all of those 12 major compositions. And so it's kind of a template of sort that shows his style and his compositional devices in great detail. The Prière, which I mentioned before,
prayer
is very much a prayer, and I think it is the most deeply personal of those 12 pieces that Franck composed. It's so personal that sometimes I think it's probably written more for an organist than for an audience. It's very deep, and some people, in fact, some of my organist friends find it boring. I strongly disagree. I find it absolutely heart-achingly beautiful. There is not a lot of pizzazz in it. It's not a virtuosic piece. It's very deep. It's very romantic, very passionate. And I think it's a real mirror into the soul of Franck. And I feel much as it's a mirror into my soul, too, when I play it. But all these 12 pieces, as I'm performing them all, I'm finding that I love them all, and I'm hard-pressed to pick any one as a favorite.
You and the station have been doing music from St. Stephen's for longer than we can probably say. We always hear Pièce a Week, mm-hmm. and we hear the chorales. Sometimes one long piece, the Grand Pièce Symphonique.
Mm.
Why do those jump out?
Well, the Pièce a Week is great because it's actually one of the shorter of the 12 pieces. And it's got a lot of bang for its buck. It begins with a tempestuous kind of intense opening, and then it has the quiet middle section, very lyrical, and then it ends absolutely triumphantly, again with those great big pauses where you just let the room take over with reverberation. The Grand Pièce, simply by its sheer length, is in many ways his magnum opus. But I guess one would have to point to the three chorales as the most important of his works because they're the most mature. It's the time in the very months before he died where his ability and his style of composing had matured to that point where you know you're hearing Franck.
Why would he have chosen the word or the term chorale for them?
It's very interesting. He had said to one of his students at one point, a few years before he died, that he wanted to write some chorales as Bach did. Although the chorales of Franck are not anything like the chorales of Bach, they are not based on chorale tunes, hymn tunes, that would have been sung by congregations, because that just wasn't a tradition in the French church. But his idea of the chorale was an originally composed hymn-like piece. And it wasn't always what you heard right at the start. For instance, the first chorale in E major, you hear this lovely opening with a tune that anybody could sing, but he said, that's not the chorale. The chorale will reveal itself eventually, which it does. And then he combines the opening theme with the chorale, and the wonderful juxtaposition of things is something that he did so well. Another thing he loved to do was canon, where he would have one voice play a tune and then another voice in the other hand or perhaps in the feet echoing it a measure or so later. All these sorts of things are devices that he used a lot. And you could hear them also in his more famous orchestral and chamber works. I think particularly of the Symphony in D minor. There are places in the Symphony in D minor where I can hear the organ works very much. And then probably my very favorite is the violin sonata, which just makes me melt and weep. If anyone hasn't heard the violin sonata, they need to listen to it. It's just exquisite and so moving. And here again, I hear the organ works in that piece. Thank you.
was that the one he gave to Isai as a wedding present?
That's correct. Absolutely. Yep. And the other thing that unites them is that they were actually Belgian-born, who flourished in France. I always like to say that César Franck is rather like Hercule Poirot. Everybody thinks he's French, but he's actually Belgian.
Yes.
I happen to be a big fan of Hercule Poirot, too.
Well, you have that sensibility that
yeah.
When you talked about playing the prayer and kind of mirroring your own soul, when you immerse yourself in the body of a composer like Franck and you're getting to say, well, this must reflect him in some way, what kind of a dialogue are you having with him through this experience?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I know the answer, but I definitely feel a strong connection there. He used to be notorious for staying late nights at Saint Clotilde practicing. In fact, I think his marriage suffered to some extent because of it. When Mrs. Franck was not happy that he kept coming home late at night past midnight. I'm a night owl too. And so I resonate with that aspect of his personality. And so when I'm practicing late at nights, when I play magnificently with nobody in the church, one of my professors used to say that when people walk into the room, the keys move. But it's a very spiritual experience to be in a darkened church late at night playing anything, but playing Franck in particular resonates with my soul in those moments.
Mark Laubach, organist and choir master at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Wilkes-Barre, speaking with us in October 2022 about his then-planned recital series to pay tribute to composer César Franck on the occasion of the 200th anniversary of the composer's birth, which would have been December 10th of that year. This Friday, January 2nd, 2026, will be the 40th anniversary of Canon Mark Laubach's tenure in his position as organist and choir master at St. Stephen's, administering the church's liturgical and choral music program, also preparing regular concert series, and coordinating Music from St. Stephen's, the weekly broadcast of performances and other music heard here on WVIA Radio, a decades-long partnership between St. Stephen's and WVIA Radio. There will be a special service to celebrate Canon Mark Laubach's 40th anniversary at St. Stephen's at 9:30 on Sunday, January 4th. It's 35 South Franklin Street in downtown Wilkes-Barre. For more information, stephenswb.org, stephenswb.org. And all of us at WVIA would like to congratulate you, Mark, on this august occasion. It's been such an honor and pleasure to work with you over all these years, and we offer you our profoundest gratitude for the remarkable range and highest quality of music making you've brought to us consistently and with joy. You can hear Music from St. Stephen's Sundays here on WVIA Radio twice, first at 7 a.m. and again at 4 p.m. WVIA.org for more information. Also, there is a WVIA video profile of Canon Mark Laubach and the special instrument he's played all these decades. The piece is titled From Bach to Monty Python, the St. Stephen's Episcopal Church Organ, and it's produced as part of the WVIA Short Takes series. And happily, Mark concludes that feature by stating, I'm not in any hurry to quit because I just dearly love being in this space playing this instrument. And what heartening news that is for all of us here in the region. Deep thanks again, Mark, for all that you've brought to us.